the last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
Joining us for the week trending is Dion Fanning, co-host of the Irish Free State podcast, and Elaine Burke, who is the host for the For Tech's Sake podcast, and who of course also contributes to our TV and streaming spot here on The Last Word every Monday. And I don't think there's any doubt as to the story which has caught the most attention globally this week when it comes to what's trending, and that is the murder of Charlie Kirk, a conservative commentator, agitator, some would describe him as, a far-right polemicist. But whatever he was, nobody deserves to be murdered in the way that he was. It was horrific to see. And Elaine Burke, that's where I want to see, because given that you know an awful lot about tech and that you do our TV spot, the graphic nature of the videos put up in which you could quite clearly see the moment when he was murdered was one of the shocking aspects of this week. Again, why did these social media companies allow such graphic depiction of murder to be so freely shared?
Yeah, there's a couple of things at play here. I'm sure people will remember the fact that a lot of these major social media platforms have rolled back content moderation in recent months. So that contributes to this. Policies across the platforms will vary between allowing certain amounts of graphic content, but generally disallowing things that glorify violence. And there's a bit of a grey area in between there where things will inevitably slip through. And also you have basically a lot of platforms now essentially prioritise video. You had an event that had a lot of young people who were recording things for their own social media platforms out of this. So you had not just one video that could be identified and then tracked down and then eliminated from the web. There was a lot of videos from a lot of different angles from this very event. So that makes it harder. If you are actually trying to moderate the content, it does make it harder to find it, track it down and take it down by its like digital footprint, essentially. And you also have an autoplay aspect as well. You have platforms that prioritize video and they autoplay a lot of them. So even if you were trying to avoid seeing this video, it was actually quite hard to do that if you were online in the direct aftermath, because you'll be just scrolling through your feed, and if it happens to have been shared there, it will play automatically. And depending on how quickly the clip has been cut or how closely it's been cut to the actual event of the shooting, you could just see that automatically.
Dion Fanning, two things immediately just come to my mind as I'm listening to Elaine there, is that we saw, for example, the murder of President Kennedy in 1963, but it was from a distance and you didn't see quite the sort of the gory details of Charlie Kirk's murder. That's one. I remember during 9/11 as well, that when people were jumping from the towers as they collapsed, decisions were taken at that time by the television stations to stop showing those pictures. But in the modern social media era, if you had something like that, you'd imagine there'd be loads of people who would be immediately sharing those particular images.
Yeah, and people seeing it. And I think something Elaine says is very important when she says to tech companies, if you are trying to stop people seeing it, there's a big, if is a big word there, because amplifying these kind of things for lots of reasons, the algorithm serving us the more and more extreme stuff, this plays into that. And, you know, if you go on X at the moment, you know, all you're being exposed to, if you leave the following column and go into the For You column is, a huge amount of extremist stuff on just that seems to be the stuff that gets fed to people. And it's, you know, so if somebody sends you a video on WhatsApp and you look and you click on this, that marks you then as somebody, I mean, let's serve more of this stuff to this person. Like the algorithm is very, very tuned in these days to giving you anything that you might, even if you pause on a video, you don't even have to click through it and you start getting fed more stuff. So I think what it does then, like the key point of what you're saying, Matt, really, is I think the JFK video, I don't think that the Zapruder film was seen for many years. I don't think that actually was seen for a long time. I think Robert Kennedy assassination might have been seen, that might have happened live on television, if I remember correctly.
But I think it's also the nature of it that you would have seen, but the graphic detail of close-up shots of the shot when Charlie Kirk was killed. I mean, it is horrific.
It's horrific, but what it does in terms of what it numbs us to and what it just exposes us to is kind of frightening when you actually also have this level of increased political violence and this sense of, you know, we're in a climate where people feel that violence is a response to any people they disagree with. And when you see violence, when you see, and you think about, we might talk about this later in terms of, you know, teenagers and social media, when you see this violence and you think of who could see that, it's kind of terrifying at the moment what's happening.
And the other thing that was very notable as well, Elaine, was the rush to judgment by people, of some of them very prominent individuals on social media who decided almost to politicise what had happened.
Yeah, a rush to judgment, a rush to comment, a rush to share, a rush with everything, really, with this story. It was, by all accounts, a media frenzy, and that includes social media, which is actually a huge part of the media landscape now. I mean, it's where a lot of people, especially with a breaking news story, are going to get information. And there's an issue there. Like, there's people who are then purposefully and accidentally sharing the wrong information in many different ways. Sometimes it's that they think it's true and they're sharing it, and sometimes it's that they are purposefully sharing disinformation. And in the case of this, where there were open holes of the story, people start filling those gaps in terms of, like, who was the shooter, what type of person that they were, what kind of ideologies they espouse. And none of that was known, and none of that is still known as we're speaking now. But people rush to fill that vacuum in this very information-heavy landscape. And I don't even like calling it information at this stage, because it's a lot of noise a lot of the time is what it is.
But it's deliberate. It's not like whatever the killer turns out to be, that doesn't matter. Like, the framing of this has already been set.
But the suspect, once you arrest a suspect, he's essentially convicted in the court of public opinion.
But it's not even about the suspect. It's about framing it in terms of, you know, this, you know, confirmation bias in terms of, I will interpret this in line with what my fundamental beliefs are. And, you know, this will be, you know, I think Donald Trump said this kind of rhetoric. Those on the radical left have compared wonderful Americans like Charlie to Nazis. This kind of rhetoric is directly responsible for the terrorism that we're seeing in our country today, and it must stop right now.
Well, one of the things that Trump was asked today on Fox News is, we have radicals on the right as well. How do we fix this country? And Trump responded, I'll tell you something that's going to get me in trouble, but I couldn't care less. The radicals on the right oftentimes are radical because they don't want to see crime. The radicals on the left, I'm sorry, I've just lost, but basically he essentially said he supports the radicals on the right and he's against the radicals on the left.
We know that.
But at a time like this, when the country...
But this again goes back to the climate we're living in. Like, that when Donald Trump talks about something, you're not expecting... this isn't the West Wing anymore. We're not going to get somebody coming in and saying, oh, you know, like, I must do the statesman-like speech that actually calms America down. That's not what we expect from, or we know we're going to get from Donald Trump. And when you have this situation, that's all that really, that's really matters. Nobody's really interested in, you know, the identity of the suspect. Nobody's really like what his, and you'll have people, and I say this as well, you'll have people then, if his politics happen to be something else, there'll be people then amplifying that, sort of feeling, not rejoicing, but amplifying that as if this proves, you know, it wasn't somebody from the left, it was somebody from wherever. And that, again, it's feeding the same kind of beast all the time. But I don't think it matters. And I take Elaine's point, but it is really, you're right, like, it isn't information we're dealing in, because they're not really dealing in information, they're dealing in propaganda.
There's another story this week, I think, which follows in this thing about propaganda. And this is the outrage that some people are expressing because of the Ukrainian woman who was stabbed to death on a train in the USA. Blake says the fellow passengers filmed it. which is actually an interesting point, rather than necessarily intervening. But an enormous amount of the people who have tried to make a political issue of that, I think, Dion, are those who haven't shown any real interest in defending Ukraine itself from Russia over the last few years.
Well, yeah, like, again, they would argue, well, this is a murder of somebody in...
It's a murder of a white woman by a black man. That's what gets them going.
That is it. And now they, you know, but if it was a Ukrainian doing something, they'd want to deport her in other circumstances. But again, I think, and even that, and that caller saying, you know, why would you, how can you politicize, why would you not politicize this? And saying what Charlie Kirk was killed for, we don't know what Charlie, you know, all we know is that somebody was murdered who shouldn't have been murdered. We don't know. You can't say for certain what he was killed for, and that's part of the problem. Everyone assumes that they know every in and out of this situation when you can't know that. And even if you do, even if it is somebody, and we see this a lot of the time with any kind of killing, people, again, to make the same point, people use it to advance their own biases in lots of situations.
Let's talk about other things. So let's talk about, well, the French apparently, Lane, are considering a ban on social media for under 15s and a social media curfew, which is, I think, following in the footsteps of the Australians, is it? But is this workable?
Yeah, so I don't know if they see it as following what Australia is doing. It's in light of a parliamentary inquiry that took place over the last 6 months, and they've made 43 recommendations, which includes this suggestion of a ban on social media for under 15s, no use of social media apps overnight from 10 p.m. to 8 a.m. to prevent overnight scrolling, and a ban on mobile phones in school. I don't know how they would enforce these things, because like what a child does in the privacy of their own home between 10 p.m. and 8 a.m. is probably between them and their parents and them alone. But these are suggestions from this parliamentary inquiry. And in the case of the Australia ban, that is due to come into effect on 10th of December. The announcement came late last year before a report that was due to be made in terms of how you could implement something like this had come out. And that report only actually came out in the last week or so. And essentially, they tested over 28,000 age verification checks from 13 different vendors to see how accurate age assurance systems could be if they were to be mandated. And they found, their conclusion was basically that age assurance is possible, but not without a margin of error. Their estimated margin of error was up to, I think it was 1.4 years, which is quite significant when you're saying the difference between you can't be under 18 using this app, but I could be 16 and a half and get by. So it's not watertight, and it is quite complex. And it's really challenging in that, as well as this, they haven't thought through maybe assigning what are the parameters for platforms to roll out these kind of technologies. Do they have to use certified technologies that are, say, privacy preserving? And also, how does it make it that not every single user on the internet has to hand in their ID every time they want to do anything online? Because realistically, that's kind of the only way to have an airtight age restriction on the internet.
Okay. Brian and Leash says, what really concerns me is the way some prominent Irish social media users who would be considered right-wing also politicised Kirk's horrific death. Rather than calling out gun violence, the extension of the culture wars into Ireland is worrying, says Brian in Leash. Yeah, we don't really have discussions about gun violence in America anymore, do we? We've just become so used to the fact that everyone carries guns and uses them.
Well, that's the thing that you would think would be a starting point if you were actually trying to dial it down a bit, is just to say, this is what, you know, a culture of guns does to people. But as you say, that's become just accepted now.
Although it was also pointed out that Charlie Kirk had said previously that some people dying as a result of gun crime was acceptable to protect Second Amendment rights.
Yeah, but that's his. But that doesn't justify him being killed. No. And also, if you have a view that there are too many guns in America, what he feels about it doesn't really alter that.
Yeah, and actually, just stay in America, because one of the stories this week was about the Irish grandmother who was detained by ICE. And also, there's been a lot about the Georgian plant, where there was the biggest ever US deportation raid, despite the fact that so many of the South Koreans working there had been brought in on special visas to construct a factory for the Americans that the Americans couldn't build for themselves, Dion.
Yeah, well, You do run up against the occasional contradiction when you
occasional
when you're dealing with the ICE crackdown. I think the bigger issue on this, Matt, is again, you know, everything feeds into the same thing. The speed and extent to which norms and regulation and protection can just fall away in a country like America, which we would have considered a robust democracy with the checks and balances that the fame checks and balances.
The guardrails. Remember all the talk last year running into the presidential election that there were guardrails, which means Trump could not act like a fascist.
Yeah. Don't worry about that. The Supreme Court will intervene. Courts will intervene. And you see this then, the absolute terror that a regime can put into people in terms of, people losing their jobs. You know, you saw it with the person who delivered the employment statistics who Trump fired. Court officials, judges, all these people. A terror takes hold, which actually is more powerful than all the guardrails, all the checks and balances you can have. And you see it now with these, this Irish grandmother who's been living in America since she was 11. And a check, I think a check from 2015, is it?
For about $25.
And she's now in a ICE detention centre. And that kind of chilling effect in terms of, and we all have experience, and we all know so many people in America, we all have experience of people saying, and these aren't the people who aren't legal, as we put it. These are people, we know people with green cards, who are now looking and going, why didn't I take out citizenship when I could? And even that mightn't protect you. But, people who now feel, I can't come back to Ireland, I can't risk being stopped at immigration for something, who knows what. And what that does to a society is extraordinary.
Yeah, and I've been talking to people in recent days who are telling me stories of family members who had been living and working in America 25, 30 years, who've decided to come back because they are now afraid. Now, they hadn't regularized their position. You could argue that they had been there illegally, but they had been working, they'd been paying taxes, things like that. And they've just decided it just isn't worth it anymore.
And also, you've got this an awful amount of business travel back and forth to America, and that's been impacted as well. People are afraid that just going to a conference in the States is going to land them into trouble because of things that they said on their social media accounts, because that is actually happening. So I am aware of a lot of academics who are refusing to appear at conferences in the States because of this risk. And when I was traveling myself earlier this year, I knew of other journalists in the cohort that was meant to travel with me who were having trouble getting their approval to travel there, something that they have done year in, year out for the same conferences and never had any problem. Like, it has really changed the landscape of travel in and out of the States.
Won't America, though, lose out because of all of that?
Well, absolutely. Like, even the case of this Georgia plant, like, this was from a $12.6 billion investment into this plant from South Korea to provide big batteries for like electric vehicles and things like that. And as you said, like, it's not something that they were going to be able to build themselves. And that factory, when it was operational, was inevitably meant to provide jobs in this economy in Georgia. And now that build has been stalled. So this is like really problematic.
Just to move on, there's culture war issues going on in Britain as well, I think it's fair to say, isn't it, Dion? Mm. I mean, one of the stories this week was about the Banksy image scrubbed off the wall of the Royal Courts of Justice. Tell us about this.
Well, this Banksy image appeared on the Royal Court of Justice, and immediately it became, people were sharing it on social media. It was becoming something that was capturing the imagination because of it was seen as further comment on the way the police have cracked down on Palestine action. You know, it was a judge using a gavel to beat a protester. It was immediately covered up, and has been painted over. And the courts and tribunal service said it was being taken down as the court was a listed building, and they were obliged to maintain its original character. But I think, again, like with all these things, the actual, the art is making a statement about something which is, again, much more sinister. We're seeing it every weekend now. People being arrested for holding up, you know, I support Palestine action, old people, people, war veterans, all sorts of people who aren't terrorists, being you know, arrested and taken into custody because of a support for Palestine action. And this extraordinary misstep, one of many missteps by the Keir Starmer's government. Like, this is a government that can't do anything but take missteps, it seems. But this is an extraordinary one in terms of just creating that sense of, again, a culture war. Keir Starmer trying to fight a culture war on ground which he can't actually ever win, but he seems determined to do it. So we see this with Palestine action. We see it with the ludicrous statements that he's coming out with. Yvette Cooper talking about how many flags she has in her house and her garden.
And bunting.
Bunting, all sorts of flags. You will be falling over yourself with flags if you come to my house today. And it's ludicrous because it's not those people, the people they're trying to appeal, they believe that this is important for, you know, the constituency they need to appeal to, that blue Labour, as they call them. But they're never going to outflank reform on that ground.
Let's finish with something entirely different, Elaine. Maybe tell us about the EuroMillions dream, first Irish winner.
Yeah, so this is the lottery where you win, and it's not just one big windfall. You win sums that will accrue over time or arrive in your bank account over time. So
it's like a monthly salary guaranteed for the next 30 years of how much?
Well, I don't know what your monthly salary is, but this is 20,000 euro every month for 30 years.
And that's tax-free, apparently.
Okay, I didn't know that. Now, that's wild.
I think lottery wins are tax-free.
And then it's a tier 2 prize. So that's the top prize, tier 2 prize of 2,000 euro a month for 5 years. So that's a bit more reasonable and salary-like. But yeah, that big prize is phenomenal win. And it's the first time people in Ireland have taken any of these Euro Dreams prizes. And it's two of them have been won, and they're both from Wicklow. So we know that one of the tickets was bought by an online player based in Wicklow, and the other was physically bought in a Super Value in Bray. So I believe there was champagne bottles popping in the Super Value in Bray, but I suppose that just brings attention to them and gets customers in thinking they'll win again.
Would that be good for you, that you know for the next 30 years that you have this big, massive chunk of money dropping into your bank account every month without having to work for it or anything like that? You'd be quite happy with that, would you?
That's the way I would like to win the lottery, I think. I don't. When it got to those, what was that huge one that they won in Cork, Matt? The
115 million.
That was too much. That was too much.
Wasn't that a syndicate as well, though?
Was it?
Thank God.
Well, at least it's spread out amongst a number of people.
But I think I'd be worried if I won that much money. Whereas 20 grand a month, that's fine.
You can manage that.
Yeah. We can leave it there. Dion Fanning from the Free State podcast. Elaine Burke from the For Tech's Sake podcast. Thank you both.
The last word. With Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.